The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Tuesday, January 6, 2009. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And later this half hour, Harry Cooney of GrowMark in Bloomington, Illinois, will take up the energy markets. In agricultural news, a hearing is scheduled next week to confirm Tom Vilsack as the next USDA secretary. We'll have these and other stories this half hour. And University of Illinois agricultural economist Darrell Good will discuss the relationship of crude oil and corn futures. It's all on the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Let's take a look at how prices settled on Tuesday in Kansas City and Chicago. In Kansas City, March wheat had a settlement of 670 up 27 and three quarters. May, 681 up 27 and a half. March wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, 643 and a half up 26 and three quarters. May, 656 and a half up 27. July, 668 up 27. March corn, 427 and a half up 16 and a quarter. May, 438 up 16 and a half. July, 448 up 16 and a half. September, 457 and three quarters up 16 and a quarter. December, 471 and a quarter up 16. January beans, 1014 and a quarter up 30 and a half. March, 1016 up 29. May, 1027 and a quarter up 29. July, settled at 1038 and a quarter up 29. November, settlement there at 1035 up 23. January soybean meal settled at $300.30 up 160. January soybean oil, the settlement 3705 up 215. February live cattle, 8855 up 100. January feeders, 96.12 and a half, down 87 and a half. February lean hogs, 63.95, up 127 and a half on the day. And those are today's settlements in Kansas City and Chicago. Let's take a look at the outside markets. February crude oil trading at $50, up 119. January ethanol, 187 and a half. The settlement up 4 4/10. February natural gas, 598 and 3, and it was down 8 9/10. February RBOB, 119 and 7/10, and it was up 1.5 cents. February heating oil, 163 and 2/10, and it was up 5 6/10. February propane, the settlement there at 72 and 7/10, and it was up 6.5. Let's look at some metal contracts. March silver, the settlement 1144 and a half, up 17.5 cents. The gold contract from February, the settlement at 866, up $8.20. Dow Jones Industrial Average trading at 9,074, up 121. The U.S. dollar 82.93, up 33 cents. The CRB at 244.28, up 6.95. And the S&P 500 at 940.76, up 13.29. Taking a look at Mike Sulla's two-state forecast, he reminds us that winter weather advisories are in effect for portions of central Illinois until 4 o'clock this afternoon and in central Indiana until midnight Eastern time tonight and for northeastern Indiana until 5 o'clock Eastern time Wednesday morning. A freezing rain advisory is also in effect for a portion of east central Illinois and west central Indiana until 6 o'clock this evening. Otherwise, tonight, cloudy in northern and central Indiana. Scattered areas of light snow and freezing drizzle. In northern Illinois, a chance for light snow after midnight. Lows from 15 to 32 degrees. Joining us on the telephone to talk about the markets is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He is in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon, Wayne.
Hi, good afternoon, Dave.
As I looked at the marketplace and looked at the activity in the last day or two, looked at total open interest, looked at how the markets were reacting, I kind of came to the conclusion that we have new players in the marketplace.
You know, I think that we do, Dave. We are seeing some of the funds and some new money coming back into this market. Every time we close a little bit higher, and they get a little more enthusiasm, why we're seeing a little more buying coming in and some new funds coming in there. So, you know, there's accumulation of new longs by the different funds and maybe some new added money that come in after the first of the year, and especially after we were able to stabilize prices after the December downfall.
So does this fairly significant rally today change your outlook on the marketplace for this week and for the next couple of weeks going into the report on the 12th as it relates to your willingness to go ahead and tell producers to pull triggers?
I think that today's activity pushed us through some of our resistance points. We were this morning when we talked, you know, we talked about selling certain levels and putting stops to get, you know, to not stay short the market.
Mm-hmm.
We were in and stopped out of a couple positions today because of those, because we did break through those resistance points, Dave. So, you know, it made us nervous to stay short at these levels, and it does seem like there is some more momentum building here, and that looks more the attitude instead of rallies are to be sold. It seems a little bit along the lines of dips are to be bought when we do have that. Of course, the report on Monday could be, we're not sure what it could be. I mean, that's why it's a report and it's unknown out there. And it's one of those things that's a little bit scary. So, you know, this morning we saw Informa's numbers. We saw South America, you know, decrease in corn and bean production both coming from down that area. And that was a little bit positive of the market as we looked at things. You know, we see that the prices have been going up, and actually the basis has been narrowing in some places on a lot of the grains, which is a different sort of thing. Generally, at increasing prices, we see the basis stay the same or widen a little bit. But farmers have been very reluctant sellers here, Dave, and it does look like, you know, there is a chance to move a little more, but we are getting up some pretty hefty prices here for right now that fundamentally maybe aren't realistic. But we did see the dollar really move off its highs. You know, we got up to 83.73, and, you know, we've backed off here to 83.66, now only up 90 points on the day rather than, you know, like a full dollar we had at one time. So
what are you suggesting then? Because, you know, I suspect that producers are going to have to do some selling in the near term in order to, you know, satisfy the tax man.
To satisfy the tax man. Oh, yes, what a great guy. And, you know, we're up here over the $10 mark in the beans. That was where we were sitting back looking for the idea that it needed to get up there. The you know, we've reached some of our goals as far as where we would have to make cash flow sales, Dave. So, you know, we are there. The fact of the matter is we're not comfortable. You know, selling something we have and going short something is two different things. And that way, so, I mean, if cash sales need to be made for cash flow, these are up at levels that are a whole lot better than they were just a week ago. We're at three-month highs. So we're not upset with making some cash sales. We don't know that we want to be shorting this market right at this point in time.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
Thank you, Dave.
That is Wayne Nelson. He is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. And Wayne joins us every Tuesday afternoon on the Closing Market Report. In agricultural news, the chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee says that his committee will conduct a hearing to review the nomination of former Governor Tom Vilsack to be the next Secretary of Agriculture. Tom Harkin says the confirmation hearing will be held next Wednesday, January 14th. The hearing falls in the middle of other key hearings of interest to agriculture. A new agreement on meat trade signed by Russia and the U.S. eased some concerns about exports for U.S. poultry and pork producers hit by high feed costs and sagging demand. The agreement allows for almost twice as much U.S. pork to enter Russia at a low duty rate in 2009 than last year, although the quota for U.S. poultry was trimmed. The new export protocol signed late on Monday allows for 750,000 tons of U.S. poultry to enter Russia in 2009 at an export duty of 25%, down from 901,400 tons in 2008. Russia is the top export market for U.S. chicken and among the top five for U.S. pork exports. Tyson Foods says that its president and chief executive, Dick Bond, is stepping down immediately in a move he says is in the best interest for himself and the company. Bond, 61, has been CEO since May of 2006. For the fiscal year, which ended September 27th, Tyson earned $86 million, or 24 cents a share, compared to $268 million, or 75 cents per share, the previous year. Tyson's chicken unit lost $118 million for the year. Also Monday, Tyson named Donnie Smith as Senior Group Vice President of Poultry and Prepared Foods. The Wall Street Journal says that the global financial crisis and reduced foreign buying power are casting a shadow over expectations for U.S. beef exports in 2009. The latest trade figures available from October are already showing the signs of declining exports. U.S. beef exports to Russia, South Korea, Mexico, and Canada were all down. Government data maintained by the U.S. Meat Export Federation shows the U.S. exported 89,205 tons of beef in October, valued at about $348 million. That is down from 98,640 tons, or $396 million, in September. A 19-year-old woman has died of H5N1 bird flu virus in Beijing after coming into contact with poultry. That according to health officials in Beijing and Hong Kong today. This human H5N1 case would be China's first in almost a year. The woman fell ill on December 24th, was hospitalized on December 27th, and died on Monday. Beijing has reported the case to the World Health Organization, and health authorities in Hong Kong and Macau have convened an emergency meeting to handle the bird flu case. Since the H5N1 virus resurfaced in Asia in 2003, it has infected 391 people, killing 247. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
The price of corn during much of the 2007 and 2008 calendar years was hooked directly to the price of crude oil. University of Illinois agricultural economist Darrell Good explains how this connection works.
Well, the argument runs like this, that ethanol use of corn is a major use of corn now, and at the margin, the argument was that's where the value of corn would be established. So the argument was you start at crude oil price that then translates into a wholesale price of gasoline. Then you can calculate an equivalent price of ethanol based on its energy value relative to gasoline plus the blender's tax credit. And then the value of ethanol would indicate what price ethanol producers could afford to pay for corn. So the argument was you go crude, gasoline, ethanol, corn. And for a period of time, really most of 2007, first half of 2008, or longer, that relationship held fairly tightly, although correlations are not perfect. At a given level of crude oil, for example, gasoline prices do vary somewhat. It's not a perfect correlation. And for a given level of gasoline, ethanol prices don't correlate one for one. And similarly, for a given price of ethanol, corn prices vary a little bit around that. So as you go from crude to corn, there is a correlation, but it's not perfect, and there is some noise in that. But it held fairly well for about an 18-month period, 2007 into 2008. The correlation between those were fairly strong. But now as we got into late 2008, what we saw when crude oil and gasoline prices broke really hard, ethanol prices did not come down nearly as rapidly as those prices. And the argument was that we got into a situation where the renewable fuel standards, the mandates, became binding, that ethanol blenders found themselves in a situation where they were required to buy and blend ethanol to meet the renewable fuel standards, regardless of price, that they had to pay for it. And the argument goes, well, they'll have to pay whatever price of ethanol it takes to keep the ethanol producers in business, because they need, they're required to use the ethanol. So I think we did see several things happen late 2008. The relationship between crude and wholesale gasoline, that relationship deteriorated a little bit as the crack spread varied a lot. And then we broke a little bit the connection between gasoline and ethanol. And then the relationship between ethanol and corn, that relationship was not as tight either. So while the whole argument holds together, it's not a perfect correlation. There's a lot of noise in that. There's a lot of other things that influence price of all those commodities. But as we move back into 2009, and if the energy prices have bottomed, and we're starting a new year on mandates and the levels there, we may see those relationships come back into a little stronger relationship. I think the big question is going to be a lot of talk now about the blending wall. As we move up and get closer and closer to having 10% of our fuel supply already in the form of ethanol, how do we expand ethanol use? Do we actually hit a wall where everything is blended to 10%, and now what do we do? Can we expand ethanol any further? I think that's going to be the question that's answered in 2009.
That was University of Illinois Extension agricultural economist Darrell Good. He says as the ethanol industry was expanding to meet the mandated needs of the reformulated fuels standard in the U.S., the price of corn hooked directly to the price of crude oil. But as the growth of that industry has slowed, other end users are playing a much larger role in pricing corn once again. Harry Cooney of GrowMark in Bloomington, Illinois, joins us now to take up the energy markets. Good afternoon, Harry.
Good afternoon, Dave. It's the first time on with you in the new year, so we'll get it started on a good note here, that's for sure.
I note that as I look at the technical charts, Harry, and I look at the crude oil, I look at the February composite, we rallied something like $16 in seven sessions, and propane is also up.
We have a real dynamic market here where it dropped tremendously, and of course we heard a lot of that in the media about how gasoline prices came down, propane prices have come down, and now it appears that we're kind of doing like a bungee cord. When the guy drops off the crane and goes all the way down, what's the first thing? It's just a fast jerk back up to the upside, and that's kind of what we're seeing in here. We had crude oil trading around $50 a barrel today, and it's right around some key moving averages up in here. So we're at a point where we may stall a little bit, but the seasonal tendencies in energies really point to a low in price here in December and January. We may have put that low in now back there in mid to late December just before Christmas.
Well, I mean, if you look back at November, for example, we had a high there of 72.86. Are you looking sort of like at the potential of a 50% retracement off that move, which would potentially be around the resistance area? That is, around $56, $57.
Yeah, I could see it getting up to those levels. What's interesting is we've turned a number of these near-term charts back into what the technicians, the chart people, would talk about the buy mode. However, when you look at long-term monthly charts, a number of those buy-sell indicators are still in what you'd call the sell mode. So I'm not in the belief that you rally right back to last year's highs by any means, but the seasonals and the near-term charts just indicate that there's probably enough of a rally to come out into the winter and springtime here to give reason to start grabbing some of these numbers on any breaks from present levels, that's for sure.
Well, it seems to me that over at the grain pits, philosophically, there has been a slight shift in attitude and change from selling rallies to buying dips. Is that what we're going to be seeing here in the oil, too?
Oh, definitely. And what people want to do now is they want to know if we can get back down to those December lows, and I doubt that we can unless the economic numbers get a lot worse. You know, even over into the stock market, all the doom and gloom of the people getting laid off and everything, a lot of these indicators in the stock market have turned back to the buy mode now, just when things look the worst. And if the economy is going to start trying to turn around via the stock market here action, if that's a true indicator, that could be bullish down the road for our energy complex, too. We probably pounded the energies down just a little further than we should have on that last rundown.
And we actually had news from the Fed Reserve today that they intend to keep interest rates quite low for a very long time. That out of the December Fed Reserve minutes, is that putting a floor under these markets?
Well, it sure could be. I mean, I look at Fed funds futures that are traded at the Board of Trade in Chicago, and they're just hovering down around that 0.25%, right where the Fed has them set. So there's no indication yet that really wants to change. Treasury bonds, long-term rates, though, are starting to try to go back up, though. There's been a tremendous break in the Treasury bond futures. So long-term interest rates, even though they were dropping a lot there in December, they've reversed course now, too. Even the CRB index, the basket of like 25 commodities or so, has started to go back into possibly an uptrend now. That's bullish for oils. It's bullish for grains and metals. And so it could have a start to a bullish tone back into the commodities here as we get into 2009 here.
We have about 30 seconds left. Is there an Obama bounce? And if so, what's it worth?
Well, and in fact, I think that's what we've seen already here as we get into the new year, is the potential for the Obama bullishness and another. So I think there could be. How far does it go? I don't know. But seasonals suggest rallies and energies out into springtime.
Thank you very much, Harry.
Thank you, Dave.
Harry Cooney of Growmark in Bloomington, Illinois. And he joins us the first Tuesday of every month to talk about the energy markets. It's Apple Tree Day. It's also National Shortbread Day and National Bean Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1884, Gregor Mendel died. Mendel was an Austrian botanist whose work was the foundation of the science of genetics. Working mainly with garden peas, some 28,000 plants over 7 years, he discovered what became known as the laws of heredity. He carefully studied for each of their plant height, pod shape, pod color, flower position, seed color, seed shape, and flower color. And he coined the genetic terms recessiveness and dominance. In 1901, Philip Armour died, an American industrialist. He pioneered the use of refrigeration in meat canning. Armour and Company became the largest meat packer in the world, and this helped Chicago become the meat packing capital of the world. In 1913, William Burton patented a process to crack petroleum, converting oil to produce gasoline. In 1929, Sheffield Farms of New York began using wax paper cartons instead of glass bottles for milk delivery. The cartons were of a triangular shape that allowed two paper cartons to take up the same amount of space as one glass milk bottle, while saving 94% in package weight. And in 1936, Warner Brothers' Looney Tunes character Porky Pig made his debut. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Been a lot of debate about whether or not Argentina later this month will begin to trend a little wetter, a little drier. What is your thoughts?
Well, a little wetter. Not a lot wetter, but there is a system that is going to be moving into Argentina this week that does bring some promise for rain countrywide, especially in the central and the northern areas. Some of this moisture will be getting up into Brazil as well. Now, will it be enough moisture to erase their soil moisture deficit, which is pretty significant? No. But there is more moisture in the forecast, and it does appear that for the next couple of weeks, they do have better chances for rain as compared to the last few weeks. So things are better, but they got a ways to go.
Looks to me like there might be some stress in the Rio Grande do Sul area.
Yeah, and that's another area in South America that's been a little bit on the dry side. And actually, the trend lately has been for the better rain chances to be in Brazil. That's shifting somewhat south closer to areas now in Argentina. And that Rio do Sul area, while there are showers in the forecast over the next week, it will be light amounts of moisture.
But generally, overall, I guess you would probably say Brazil and Argentina doing fairly well for this time of year.
Yeah, doing okay. I certainly think Argentina is a concern with its dryness, and that will need to be watched, but nothing that I would categorize as severe right now in terms of concerns.
Other places on the global scale that you're looking at?
Well, if we were to go over to Australia, there is a pattern there this winter which has been more moist than the past several winters, and conditions there have gotten better. There is going to be a significant storm affecting some areas of north central and eastern areas of Australia this week. So Australia's forecast is looking good for moisture-wise. If we were to go over and look at India over there, they've had a little bit of a pattern here recently that's gotten drier, and that trend looks to be dry as well. Europe experiencing some colder winter weather right now. In fact, in the northern hemisphere, it's a pretty typical January so far. Nothing extraordinary.
Let's turn our attention to the U.S. and the corn and soybean belts. And let me ask you whether you think that since the harvest, we have had a fairly typical winter in terms of precipitation toward charging the soil for the spring.
Well, I certainly think that we've got some good opportunities for doing that. At least in the short term, the heavier precipitation is going to be found over the southeast United States and the eastern seaboard. There's going to be a wet weather pattern developing there. Some of that moisture will get into the eastern Corn Belt, Ohio, portions of Indiana will get some good moisture out of this. But usually, January tends to be one of the drier months of the year. So precipitation amounts don't tend to be very big, but the way the pattern seems to be evolving, at least this winter, it's not unlike last winter in many aspects of the way the jet stream is behaving, the way that water temperatures are in the Pacific. So I would say that leading out of winter into early spring, odds of decent moisture, at least right now, look pretty good.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And that is today's closing market report. Remember, you can listen to all of our agricultural broadcasts on the web. Go to WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.